Welcome, my name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. And we're here for a Doctor Who news chat of recent events in the world of Doctor Who, because there's precious little to talk about the TV show, which is a matter of some bewilderment for a few people. It does seem strangely muted, doesn't it?
Yep.
There you go. Case closed. So, but there are other things going on in the world of Doctor Who. There's a couple of things that we're going to talk about. I'm not sure which one to start with, to be honest with you. I suppose the biggest thing is what's just been released this week. The news has been released this week because it's a visual treat, and it is the cover of the new Doctor Who spin-off box set from Big Finish. It is the second box of The Lives of Captain Jack, and the cover features John Barrowman as the Sixth Doctor. In which comes from a story called Peace of Mind by James Goss. And the summary for that story, and there's three in the box set, but the summary for that one is, when the Sixth Doctor falls dying into his arms, Jack must carry on in his place. Is the universe ready for a whole new kind of Doctor? But it's a nice visual, isn't it, that cover?
Yeah, it's a nice visual.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have been looking at that thinking, ooh, that's interesting, which is nice to have something, ooh, that's interesting to talk about with Doctor Who. Also in the box set is What Have I Done by Guy Adams and Driving Miss Wells again by James Goss, which also features newsreader Trinity Wells from back in the Russell T Davies era. And I think she might have appeared since then as well on at least one occasion. That's what's going on with Big Finish at the moment, which I'm surprised they haven't maybe pushed by this stage the BBC into going back towards Torchwood. I don't know. It's just Torchwood seems to have a nice new life on Big Finish, but it would be nice for it to have a new, nice new life on the TV, I think.
I don't know. I think what you said earlier about not really anything about Doctor Who happening at the moment is very much where I stand with it. I just don't even really think about it anymore. I suppose for the BBC, I think there's been a big drive for the show to move forward. And I guess things like Torchwood is a step back and goes slightly against that sort of rebranding. Maybe that's something to do with it. I don't know. I mean, Torchwood's never been very satisfying, has it? And Big Finish has always been very... it sort of has a legacy of being something which can be very close to what fans would like out of their show, because it's appealing to a niche audience rather than to a broad audience. And maybe that's the problem with Torchwood as well. As soon as you try and move it back to a broad format, it's like, does that audience really exist anymore?
Well, it could be said that Torchwood maybe peaked with Children of Earth and didn't really fulfill its potential after Children of Earth.
Yeah.
That was the only time it felt different and brave.
But it didn't feel like Torchwood either, to be fair. I mean, Children of Earth does not feel like Torchwood season 1, 2, or 4.
No.
So the question is it an anomaly? Is it wrong in a sense by being right? And I think Torchwood, probably one of the reasons Torchwood's never come back again, is because there's just always been a feeling that no one really knows what Torchwood should be and who it should be aimed at. And that includes not just age groups, but obviously internationally, when it moves towards an American audience as well. And it's like they don't know where it should be and who it's for and who it actually is. You know, is Torchwood about Captain Jack? Is it about Gwen? Is it about a larger team? Is it irrelevant to the team? Is it about an organization? If it is, how does that organization exist? What sort of tone does it exist? Is it sort of fun, slightly RTD crazy, Batcave sort of thing? Or is it something quite serious and something more in line with sort of BBC thrillers, as Children of Earth was? But I think you're right. To some degree, I think one thing that Big Finish is very good at is actually finding a sort of tone for its material, even if sometimes, obviously, it shifts genre in terms of whether it's serious or horror or comedy. It sort of knows what it is. And it's probably what it's doing good for Torchwood is it can actually give it a feeling of knowing what it is. But whether that could translate back to television, I don't know. I'd like to see Captain Jack again. I kind of feel that Torchwood just... I think the premise of it just never worked for me. And I don't think it ever will. And Children of Earth was like the deconstruction of Torchwood. It was like, here's a show where we destroyed Torchwood. Something else is happening. And a few of Torchwood will try and do something about it and ultimately actually fail. Largely. Which was interesting, but is it Torchwood? I don't know. It's almost like his Canine and Company, Doctor Who. It's like, it has Canine in it. It has the word of the Doctor, but ultimately it's not really doing anything that's Doctor Who. So, yeah, I don't know. But I'm kind of pleased to see I have life there.
Yeah. I wonder, in respect to what you just said then, I wonder how Russell T Davies' new series, whether it will fit, whether it will feel like Children of Earth. Because it does have a similar sort of, or even Miracle Day, because it does have a similar sort of taking our current situations and spinning them round and looking at the consequences of particular actions about it.
Yeah. It could be. I mean, I suppose Miracle Day did have, tonally was a little closer to Children of Earth than season one and two as well.
Yeah, they just kind of over-egged it, maybe, I think, didn't they? It was too long, I think, Miracle Day.
Yeah, I think it was also a premise they didn't know really how to end or resolve comfortably. But again, even Miracle Day still has this problem that, I mean, that Captain Jack is very much like a Batman through it. I don't know, it's a really odd thing, and it should work because Doctor Who does the same sort of thing, but Captain Jack's a very difficult one to... I think the mistake they ever did with Torchwood, with Captain Jack, is that inevitably Captain Jack is more interesting than Torchwood.
Yeah.
And Torchwood essentially without Captain Jack is UNIT, so you've got that problem. And Captain Jack, I think, would probably work better, almost like a fugitive sort of thing, where you have him moving from place to place, that sort of slightly on the run, road trippy sort of world, where he becomes a central thing, encountering different things episode per episode. But as soon as you try and ground him into a sort of, inverted commas, real world, it always looks a bit insane, especially obviously when you make it a bit insane. And Miracle Day still felt a bit like that. It's quite a serious concept in a way, but he is so cartoony in so many ways. But yeah, I like the way Big Finish can play with that. And that cover seems to me like they're playing with that. And that's what Barrowman's good at as well. I think it's just, like you said at the beginning, it's nice that Torchwood has found some form of home where it can, you know, have some credibility and enjoy itself without being constantly having to live up to something perhaps it just can't really do.
Well, Years and Years starts later in May. I imagine it'll probably start when Line of Duty finishes. It's a 6-part series with people like Russell Tovey, Rory Kinnear, Jessica Hines and Anne Reed. So all people with connections to Doctor Who or sister shows or whatever. So yeah, that's on BBC One later in May. And you can head over to the Big Finish website. As ever, everything we talk about is in the show notes to find out more about the next box set of The Lives of Captain Jack. Let's move on to our next topic, which is the BBC's new Doctor Who episode, which will be premiered later this year at the Tribeca Film Festival. It is a virtual reality immersive CGI Doctor Who adventure, 13 minutes long, and with a sonic screwdriver, it is down to you to help the Doctor as she faces the forces of evil and teenage angst. Don't know what that's about, possibly something to do with the plot. In this animated 13-minute virtual reality adventure, This all feels a bit familiar, in all honesty, except with the added element of virtual reality. I think one of the things that Doctor Who games, because this essentially is a game, have got wrong, with the exception of the Eternity Clock, is, and a few of the retro games, is not giving the player the chance to be the Doctor. So, I mean, obviously we don't know an awful lot about this or how it's going to turn out, and it's, but you know, it is, it does seem a little bit of a, there's no Doctor Who in 2019, let's make something as well. This was first announced back in February, but we got the broadcast, the air date for this in April. Joe Pearce, creative director for the BBC's digital drama team, says fans will experience a TARDIS like never before in this thrilling new interactive story. As ever, the Doctor is full of warmth, wit and charm, helped by a wonderful performance from Jodie, which puts fans at the heart of the story as they immerse themselves in this beautifully animated world.
I've said this before, but an old video game producer friend of mine was always very passionate about the idea that Doctor Who should come back permanently as an animated series on the basis that it's very suitable for the sort of concepts and larger than life topics. It would allow you to slip back and forth through the continuity and have different doctors without having to worry about age. You would probably find that it would have a market where you could sort of have a far more free and less rigid type of continuity for a show, which is about, you know, time and fragmented reality, I guess. I've never really liked it in cartoon form, though, and I've never been quite sure why. And I think for me, somehow, what's always interested me with Doctor Who is that, obviously, like with a lot of things we watch that are, inverted commas, real, is that sort of interrogation of reality with fantasy, is seeing something which is absurd yet physical as if it could exist. And that sort of tension is where Doctor Who always sort of kind of exists, because a lot of it's set on Earth, a lot of it's set in time, you know, our times. It's that sort of thing which makes it interesting. And when it's sort of set in an animated world, that almost like that consistency flattens it for me. I don't know. I mean, it's obviously what you get out of the shows, but I've always kind of liked that, the sort of the feel of it. And I'm not quite sure why, or maybe I'm just getting old.
That last point's undeniable.
Possibly.
I mean, I would partially agree with you. I think Doctor Who animations, I think the one with David Tennant and Fiam Agyeman, I think that one was good. The one that followed that, which was very CGI and very kind of, I mean, visibly, it was like 10 years out of date visually. It was really not well done at all. The one set on a
Dream.
Yeah, UFO base.
Yeah.
American Air Force Base, that one.
Yeah.
Dreamland. But the prior one, the Quest one, which also had Anthony Head in it, that was good. I think that was well animated as well. You could see, obviously, there was a budget restriction, but it looked good. The best Doctor Who animation, I think, has got to be the one on YouTube, the manga anime style.
Yeah.
You take a leap whether you like that, mix of Doctor Who or not, but like in terms of the quality and the consistency and, you know, there's a clear piece of, you know, clear storyboarding has gone into that. In fact, one version, you actually see the storyboard. But, you know, it looks and feels like something that is Doctor Who, but it's clearly different from Doctor Who. And it's featured the Third Doctor and the Master in a contemporary setting. And basically, those are strengths of, as you say, of an animated Doctor Who. I think there's lots of ways Doctor Who could go. We can sit here and easily start bashing what has just gone on with Doctor Who. And, you know, there's lots of strengths with season 11 of Doctor Who. But, I can't help but feeling that there's something missing in the show at the moment. My boy and I watched Spearhead from Space over the last 2 days on Blu-ray, which I'd forgotten I had. And I was just going through some things I found, and I thought, oh, I'll stick this on for a little bit. And I actually forgot to press play. So I was just watching. I just had the menu running in the background, and Bruce came in and saw it. He said, what's this? I said, it's an old Doctor Who with the Autons in it. He said, let's watch it then. So we watched it. And, you know, there's a bit of a pacing difference to contemporary Who. You know, there's nearly 50 years between them. But once the story gets going in episode two, he was absolutely glued to it. And, you know, there's the danger. You feel the danger and the jeopardy and the excitement and the drama, and that's famous alien invasion, which is kind of the first. Obviously, it gets covered up, but it's not like an undercover alien invasion. I mean, obviously it's secret, but you know, it's not done in the dead of night, and you know, London isn't evacuated in order for the alien invasion to take place. It's right there in everyone's faces. So,
yeah,
you know, it's I think there's a lot of power and energy in that Doctor Who that maybe is missing now, on TV at least. But I don't really think that's anything to do with the cast. I don't think it's a major issue in terms of the cast's interpretation of the scripts. I think it's the direction of the show at the moment just doesn't want to do that sort of thing.
Well, I still think the direction of the show is trying to do that sort of thing. I think it's trying to do the 60s, 70s sort of thing largely. And whether it works is obviously subjective, but I think it is actually trying to do that more than what has been going recently. I'm still trying to work out why I've never been over keen on the animations. And I suppose it's the same that I've never been massively over keen on the comics either. And I wonder whether some part of me as well, again, is Doctor Who's largely about performance. And maybe more with cart animation than comics, where you have a partial performance, it becomes harder to almost negotiate that with the actor that you already know. If you didn't know the actor, like for instance, well, or you knew the actor but hadn't seen them perform, like with The Scream of Shackler, that's not so bad in a weird way, even though the animation is not brilliant because you've never seen. You've never seen that doctor as a physical, so you've never sort of seen the expression. I think, but obviously with audio you don't have that either, but then with audio you've got nothing visual to contest with your imagination of what that expression's like. So I think that's probably one of my reasons I find animation quite difficult, is that you know, you're constantly having to fight seeing this sort of very flat performance literally from the visuals to the animated performance of the, ironically, of the actor that you can't see, and maybe that is a bit of a tension I don't like.
But
your point with Spirit from Space, to be fair though, Spirit from Space is one of a really good story. It is a really good. I mean,
sure. Yeah.
It is. You're totally right. The pacing is very different today. I said before, you know, many years ago, I remember showing my girlfriend. City of Death, and she was younger than me, there was a fairly big age gap, but she found that really difficult because the pacing was, I could tell what she was getting bored because the pacing was so different. And that City of Death is considered to be, you know, one of the best, and it's actually quite well paced as well. It's quite reasonably paced for Doctor Who, but that was too slow. So yeah, I don't know. So the bottom line is that I'm sure it'll be interesting. I get tired with every attempt to do something different than the show that is interactive, that has to involve the sonic screwdriver. Had that with the Doctor Who video game, and
yeah,
the producer on that would tell you as well. It's like BBC were very keen on there being a sonic screwdriver mini game or something for people to waggle around, and they were like, that's going to be hard to create engaging gameplay with that, and they were like, no,
there's one of those in Eternity Clock as well.
I mean, it's probably one of the one areas I would agree that the sonic is overused is in video games.
I suppose this, if I'm talking about sonic screwdrivers, it's a good point to let you know, if you haven't already spotted it, there's an ebook on the website that you can download for free by Brian Terranova. And there's the previous podcast in which I discuss it with him, was in-depth research into the Russell T. Davies era sonic screwdrivers. It's a fascinating piece of work. Over, I can't remember how long it is now, 30-odd pages, if not more. And it gets updated regularly as Brian finds out more information. So we're up to the third or fourth version now. So you'll find that on the beyondcastobus.com website. On just on the sidebar, should be quite easy to find. And there'll be a show note for it as well. Missing 1985 episode Mission to the Unknown was authentically brought back to life in a unique student project in February by students at the University of Central Lancashire, which also was also featured Nicholas Briggs, and it had a few famous visitors alongside him, namely Edward D'Souza and one Peter Purvis. I'd really love to see the results of this. And was Peter Purvis said, this is an absolutely wonderful project, even more so as this episode was a one-off introduction to the massive 12-part Dalek Master Plan. I can remember at the time that we were a bit miffed not to be included in any way at all in the episode, he means. But actually, it was a nice week off in the end. I am intrigued to see what has been done and hope it could be a precursor to more reconstructions in the future. So, yeah, that was produced. And, you know, they created, you know, photo of accurate costumes and sets and reshot it. Which, yeah. Dr. Ireland of the UC LAN says it's a cracking script, and remaking it proved to be an exciting challenge and learning experience for all concerned. We often talk about the theory of historical television production techniques, but this project meant the students lived the high-pressured reality of it. And that's something we kind of overlook, don't we, with classic Doctor Who? And, you know, other shows from that era. But, you know, they were making shows with huge lumbering equipment and without any digital influence whatsoever beyond the binary off and on of the mains, and doing special effects with overlays and vision mixing and stuff. So this is, I really would like to see how this turned out. I think it'd be fascinating to watch it, especially to reference it alongside photos from the episode. What do you think? Is this something you'd be interested in doing?
Well, I wouldn't be interested in doing, but I think it's a good, I think it's a really interesting historical approach to sort of seeing how those elements of television production come together in an actual real space. Because you could learn about the stuff, but to actually have to actually set it out. So, you know, in a sense, you know, you're having, I mean, it's that beautiful, we've talked about this again before, on the Dalek Invasion of Earth DVD, where they have several scenes from episodes 5 or 6, where you can actually, they play the scene out, and in the bottom corner, they have the studio plan, and they show you where everyone is moving into position, because it's obviously recorded as near enough to live as they can, where people are moving, where the cameras are moving to prepare for the next scene, while another scene is being shot. So you can really see that sort of tapestry working in action, and how complex that sort of production practice was. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it's something if universities have the money to do, it's a great approach. It's a great approach to learning, especially if you're able to try and recreate what shows which no longer exist. So you know you're not able to actually go and see what they've done and compare. You're literally almost doing it fresh, but based on some prior knowledge. So yeah, I think it's a really smart idea. I heartily approve. I think it's a fascinating period in terms of television production, because it situates itself so much between sort of the stage and television as we know now. So I think that is something that's really great to investigate and explore. I think that's probably really interesting for film students as well.
Okay, so we'll move on from that. Hopefully that'll be revealed at some point the finished product of that, the end result. We're going to move on to our last topic for this week's podcast with a K. Might be this month's podcast with a K. We'll see how the rest of the May turns out. And Tony Slattery, the actor, comedy actor, has been kind of off the radar for a good decade or so. And he recently popped up in an interview with The Guardian as he was off to the Edinburgh Fringe in a few months' time in order to do some live improv with a new Whose Line Is It Anyway show, which he was a big part of in the 90s. Which you might be sat there thinking, well, what the hell's this got to do with Doctor Who? But back in 1994, he was one of the many people, and there was a lot of them, who auditioned for Doctor Who in the USA. Obviously, there's Paul McGann, Paul McGann's brother, Mark McGann. There was, who else was there? Rob Howland. There was, I've mentioned some names to James before we had this discussion and I've forgotten some of them. And, I'll tell you who else was one. Paul Brown, maybe the guy's name was. Well, also, Tony Slattery was one of them. And there's a video in the show notes that you find of Tony Slattery watching his audition, which he apparently had absolutely no recollection of, which is quite amusing, I always find, with actors going to so many auditions and not even realising that they've auditioned.
Well, it was probably other reasons why he might not be able to
remember. There may be other reasons why he can't remember. Yeah, he's had a rough time over the years with suffering from bipolar disorder and various medication. But alcohol as well.
There was alcohol and, various substance abuse, which he struggled with, which he has been very candidly talking about recently in a Guardian interview.
That's right, yeah. Which you'll also find a link to below. So, he was always a fun chap back in the day, Tony Slattery. Very, very... he's kind of not too dissimilar. Those very, very kind of different in approach and the end result. But he's had a kind of a... He had a presence not too dissimilar to Rick Mayall, I always find. He'd very much take over. If he was in something, he's the one that you're watching. So it was a bit. I mean, even in those, I was watching some clips of him in some other shows that he's done, sort of like since the turn of the century, as it were. And it's recognisably him, looking a little bit older. But there's an episode of Stephen Fry's Kingdom. As soon as you realise that you're watching Tony Slattery, and not Stephen Fry.
Mm.
Stephen Fry being the huge figure that he is. Physically and metaphysically, for want of a better term, it's a shame that he wasn't able to translate his obvious talents, I suppose. But let's hope he's well enough to, handle this new wave of popularity. That would be great for him. That's in the show notes as well. You can check that out. It'll be quite interesting little. And finally, a moment from this week's podcast.
It's worth having a look because there will be videos of him on Whose Line Is It Anyway? The original UK version, for people who don't know who he is. And perhaps that would give a better context to why people thought why he would be someone that wouldn't be totally unsurprising that would go for casting for Doctor Who, because there was a lot of energy in his performance. Very British, cheeky, quite charming. So you can see why that was why he would be one that would go forward for it. And the video is actually quite interesting to watch. It's also quite sad as well, because I don't know. I find these sort of videos quite uncomfortable when you're getting those reactions. And his reaction is that, you can see that mixture of confusion and at some points, quite upset that, the whole thing's quite hard to watch. But at the same time, it is a fascinating little bit of historical history and.
Yeah. So we'll check that out. That brings us to the end. There's maybe some more Doctor Who stuff coming along with myself and James and Gareth in the following weeks, and I may even get Simon and James Baldock on at some point soon. But you may like to know that there's another podcast live around the same time as this, in which James and I talk about Avengers Endgame. So if that is something you want to listen to, then check that out as well. But until you hear from us again, from James and myself, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.